You're listening to episode 77 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? I'm really excited to share that we're in the middle of setting up an online shop for 88 Cups of Tea. We're working hard at making sure that whatever we offer will add tremendous value to your storytelling process. We're also going to have some fun 88 Cups of Tea swag available in our online shop. But for now, we set up a temporary PayPal link for those of you who'd love to support our show and rock your 88 Cups of Tea swag. To grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug, signed by yours truly, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug. Thank you in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. On to the next part of our intro. If you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with fellow writers, or if you'd like to submit questions for future guests on our show, join me over at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. You'll also get sneak peeks of our publishing calendar for future episodes. For my craft-focused writers, there's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there. Now on to our show. I'm so excited to have Angie Thomas with us today. Angie is the author of her young adult novel, The Hate U Give, which debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. If you haven't yet, make sure to grab a copy for yourself. I love this book. And of course, there's no surprise that the movie adaptation is already currently in development and is being produced by Fox 2000 and Temple Hill, the same team that produced The Fault in Our Stars and the Maze Runner franchise. In today's episode, we dive right into the importance of raising diverse voices in the literary world. Angie also walks us through the inspiration behind her novel, The Hate U Give, and how music, hip-hop, and Tupac played an influential role throughout her writing process. Angie shares her experiences as a debut author and how creating an online presence will help you build genuine relationships within the writing community. For our craft-focused listeners, Angie shares advice on how to craft powerful narratives and build strong characters for your stories, and why research must be a priority to create authentic, diverse characters, and how to write a successful query letter. Now let's jump right in.
You guys are going to be so excited. We have Angie Thomas on the show with us today. I know so many of you are so pumped about Angie and her work. I'm just as pumped. Angie, welcome to our show. How are you?
I'm great. Hi. Hi, everyone. This is a dream come true, so I'm excited. I really am. I'm not even exaggerating.
We are freaking pumped to have you here. I just want to dive right in. Your book, The Hate U Give, is your debut novel, and it's going to be releasing on February 28th.
Yeah, that's a little over a week away, and I'm freaking out.
By the time listeners, you guys hear this, we were chatting right before Angie's book came out. You guys get to hear Angie and how she's feeling right before. How are you feeling? Are you freaking out? Like, I'm freaking out. I didn't even write the book. Holy moly.
I am. Some days I'm nervous, and some days I'm excited. It goes back and forth. I'm more excited though for the readers because I've had so many teenagers, especially young Black girls, who have reached out to me and they're like, this book is what I've been looking for my entire life. Thank you for writing it. I can't wait to read it. So I can't wait for them to read it.
Well, first of all, everyone has access to your excerpt. It's on elle.com and we'll have that linked up in your show notes page. But also, I have a copy of your book. My girlfriend got to read it first and she just couldn't put the book down. And I'm such a slow reader. So I always have my girlfriend give me notes. Yours is one of the few books where I'm like, oh, no. I need to have a look at this book myself too. I'm telling you, the voice of your narrator of Star is phenomenal. As soon as I read yours, I'm like, holy crap, this is so refreshing. Listeners, by now, once this episode is released, you have access to the book. Please grab a copy and read it. It's so important. It should be a required reading for every student in school. I'm not even kidding. Can we kick it off and talk about your relationship with books and libraries growing up?
Whenever I tell this story, people always get sad, but I promise it ends on a good note. When I was around 6 years old, I was in the neighborhood park and two drug dealers decided to recreate the Wild Wild West and have a shootout. I was almost in the crossfire, and I got on my bike. I got away with the quickness. My mom had to look for me afterwards because I left the park. I actually ended up on a busy street blocks away. After she found me, she took me to a library, and she said she wanted me to learn that there was more to the world than what I saw that day or what I saw every day. So I left the library that day with a whole lot of books. And so it was from then on that my love for books just blossomed, and my love for reading, and then my love for storytelling, because I would always read the stories, or my mom would read stories to me, and afterwards I would tell my own versions of them, like fan fiction, kindergarten edition.
I love that so much. Which were the books that were your total favorite that you held so close to your heart even till this day?
Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry is the book for me because it was the first time I saw a book about a young Black girl in Mississippi. And there I was, a young Black girl in Mississippi. It's one of those books that stays with me. And whenever someone asks me what was the book that changed me, it was that one. Even though it was set in a different time period, there was something about the fact that we see this young girl who is so badass in this book, despite everything that she was going through and everything that was happening around her. Like I said, although the time periods were different and she was dealing with things I was not dealing with, like Klansmen and stuff like that, it still gave me hope in the sense of, okay, if this girl can deal with all of that, I can deal with what I'm dealing with. So that's definitely the book that really just kicked in any badassness that I have now.
I love that your mom was so encouraging in that way, too. What made her specifically want to bring you to the library? What is her connection with books?
My mom was definitely an educator, and my grandmother was as well. So my grandmother had me doing multiplication tables at 3 years old. Between the two of them, I really had no choice but to get into books because we were definitely a book household.
I love, love, love that. And that's really cool to know about that book that really changed your whole viewpoint about the world and just about your perspective and about connecting to others too. That's the beautiful thing about books. It makes you so much more aware. There's many people that agree that book is a form of activism, and we hear that often.
Definitely.
It's mostly usually because of empathy. You get to step into these characters' shoes. You really understand where they're coming from. You're understanding their culture, their background, how they grew up. You have no choice but to be more open and more accepting, and then you learn so much more. Can you give us a snapshot of The Hate U Give for the listeners who have not had a chance to pick up your book yet?
Sure. The Hate U Give is about 16-year-old Star, who lives basically in two different worlds. The private school that she attends that is mostly white, and the neighborhood that she lives in that we will call the hood, for lack of better words, that is mostly Black. Her two worlds clash in a way when she is the sole witness to her childhood best friend being killed by a police officer. He was unarmed at the time, but he may or may not have been a drug dealer. It comes down to Star being the sole witness, and what she does or does not say could not only change her entire community, but it could also end her life.
That specific scene, I just want to tell you, Angie, oh my God, I had freaking goosebumps up and down. I don't even know. I got goosebumps in my stomach and my back. I didn't even know it was possible. I'm like, what the? What are these prickly things happening? It made all the hairs stand up. I make myself sound so hairy right now, but it was bone chilling. And I remember my girlfriend interrupted me, and she just shows me Instagram of cute dog. I'm like, girl, I am reading this part. This is literally when somebody gets killed. I felt so bad, but she totally understood. Your writing is so powerful. I need to know, okay, writing-wise, this is your debut novel. I find insane. What inspired you to write this book?
Thank you for saying all these awesome things. This is the best way to start the week, so thank you.
You're going to hear a lot more rolling in, okay? So you better get used to it. I'm just massaging this in.
I got the idea for the book back in 2010, 2011. I was a senior in college, and that was after the shooting death of Oscar Grant in Oakland, California. He was a young Black man who was killed by police. At the time, I was a lot like Star, actually. I was attending a mostly white, upper-class, conservative, Christian college. I just threw a whole bunch of words in there. But that's the perfect way to describe it. And I lived in the hood. It was a 10-minute drive between my school and home. But in those 10 minutes, I went between two totally different worlds. I would literally cross a bridge and go from the hood to the nice neighborhood. Being in those two different worlds, I heard two different conversations about Oscar. At home, he was one of our own, but at school, he may have deserved it. Instead of burning down the entire campus of my school, I wrote the short story that would later become The Hate U Give. When I was doing it as a short story, it was a part of my senior project. Every week, I would have to turn in a little piece here and there for my professor to basically show that I was actually working on it. Every time I would turn something in, he would pull me aside and he would say in his deep Southern accent, "Darling, you're going too far with this." And at first I'm thinking, what do you mean I'm going too far? Keep in mind, this is older white gentlemen. So I'm like, what do you mean I'm going too far? But no, what he meant was I was adding too many characters and too many plot details for a short story. He said, "This would make a darn good novel one day."
I was bracing myself like, oh no, he didn't. Let me let Angie finish. And I'm glad I did. So he was the one who encouraged you to make this a full-fledged novel.
Yeah, he did. Honestly, because it was such an emotionally and mentally draining book, I put it aside for a couple of years. I didn't get back to it until maybe 2014, early 2015, because that was after Trayvon happened and after Michael Brown happened and after Tamir Rice. And I'm seeing all of these cases and I'm feeling the same anger, frustration, hurt, and fear. The only thing I knew how to do was write. So I picked it back up. And here we are now. I'm still amazed. I really am.
That's incredible. And now when you said that you were writing this, that was your way of expressing how you felt after what happened to Oscar Grant. With the short story originally, was that something that just flowed out naturally? There are a lot of writers who just write on their own. And there's other writers who almost like journal style diary entries. And there's others who throw themselves in workshops and find critique partners and writing mentors to work on what they're working on. What was your route?
I just sat down and wrote. I got the idea of this young girl who was in the middle of this situation, being in these two worlds like I was at the time. And I got the idea for Khalil. Actually, Khalil came first because I remember seeing with Oscar Grant. Oscar was an ex-con and he used to sell drugs. That seemed to be what most people were focusing on instead of him and the fact that he lost his life. And I remember because I saw so many Oscars around me every single day, I wanted to tell their story. So I was getting all of these ideas about Khalil and about Star and even about Star's dad, because those were the three characters I came up with first.
Wow.
And I was writing all of these ideas down about them in the middle of class. And then I would go home and try to figure out, okay, how can I make this into a story? It started coming together just from those little notes that I would write about these characters and their experiences and their backgrounds.
That also reminds me of the part in your book about where Star comes from too, her background. And I found that dynamic so fascinating. I think it was my first time it hit me when I read about almost like royalty in a way, where if someone ran with a certain crowd or group, and then if they have a kid, then that kid is born royalty within that crowd. But then if you're out of that scene, you're totally X'd out of that community. Is that something that you had your own connections with in the real world?
I did a lot of research. I had to watch a lot of documentaries, and I had to search things on Google that would have probably put me in jail if they were being monitored. Reading firsthand experiences of gang members. I had to read things like that and read books even about a lot of former gang members and what it means for them to be out of the gang and the struggle that they have of, okay, my old life versus my new life. It was fascinating to me because I've always heard things like that, but really reading about it and watching the documentaries and really getting into it, like you, it fascinated me and it makes sense at the same time, but it's also, wow, it's almost these mini society within society and we don't pay much attention to them, but they have their own rules.
How long was that research process?
It took a couple of months. I have this weird fascination with things like that. So throughout my life, I've read and watched a lot of stuff on gangs and the gang culture. It took a couple of months for sure. And I said it was worth it because if nothing else, I feel like I was able to give a more authentic point of view on things. I always feel writers definitely should research. So often we think, okay, well, I can just make this up and let the chips fall where they may. But no.
Yeah.
Even with some something like that, I think research has to be a priority, because you are talking about something that's real and you are talking about things that do happen. You want it to be authentic, especially if it ever falls into the hands of someone who has had that experience. All I could think as I was writing was, what if somehow, some way, this does end up in a gang member's hands or a former gang member's hands?
Oh my gosh,
do I want them looking at me? She got that totally wrong. Because if they look at it and they see that it's wrong, that's going to take away the entire book from them.
It's okay. In an absolute disrespectful kind of way. It touches on the topics that I've been bringing up recently for this year's interviews. We had a guest, Justina Ireland, on the show. And we also had another guest, Heidi Heilig, with everything happening. And I think also to add to that avalanche rolling down into a huge ball of catastrophic things happening. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't help but ask, when you're writing diverse characters, it almost reminds me of that too. When writing diverse characters, it's so important to do the freaking research, especially if you have no relation to a specific character and you're writing about a character with a totally different background. You really have to watch what you're saying. You really got to be careful. You really got to honor that other character's, that character's story, that person's story. Because like you said, if it falls into, for example, speaking about this directly about the gang member's hands, you don't want to disrespect the way they run their lives and what they've experienced. Right. You know, you don't want to discredit that. There's articles now about sensitivity readers who are available mm-hmm. to go through your manuscript. And I love that. I think that's incredible. Yeah. Since we were talking a little bit about that, if you have any thoughts on writing diverse characters and how to stay authentic, but also respectful at the same time.
My relationship with it is complicated. On one hand, we need as many diverse characters as we can get. But on the other hand, I feel we need to have priority for diverse authors, because we will get more authentic experiences. One thing I would like to put out there is, when we're saying something is problematic or we're calling a book out for being problematic, it is not censorship. We're asking you to have the decency to get this right, because problematic representation does hurt. I say that from experience. It does hurt. And we're not asking you to not write something. We're not asking you to stop writing something. We're asking you to put in the work to get it right. And we see this a lot lately. People are so offended by the idea of having a sensitivity reader. But would you not hire someone or ask someone to look over something if you were writing, say, a legal thriller? Would you not discuss it with a lawyer if you had no legal background? You would, hopefully.
That was such a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. That makes it even more, hello, common sense. Why is there an argument about this? I don't get it.
I was reading an article the other day that they interviewed a few young adult authors, and one of my friends, Danielle Clayton, she made a great comment and it stuck with me. She said, I'm okay with doing sensitivity reads, but I'm also feeling like I'm giving away part of my culture and part of my identity when I'm allowing a non-Black author to have these gems of information that belong to my culture and my identity, and they're using it to make profit. And there's sometimes that internal conflict, which I understand completely, because I see a lot of books lately, particularly I'm seeing more books with characters of color, specifically Black characters, but we see a lot of white authors behind them. On one hand, you feel great because, okay, there's more opportunities for kids to see themselves in books. But on the other hand, as a Black author, I'm wishing that that book was by a Black author. I think it's more important than the representation itself sometimes. I think we need those authors, because when we have authors from a marginalized background, they can give that authenticity that you will not get with a book written by someone who does not share that marginalization. That's not saying that it cannot be good. I'm not saying that a white author cannot write a book about a Black character and it won't be good. It can be good, but it will not be the same. Like I said, it's complicated, because I do want the representation, but I do want more authors of color out there. And I think that we need to raise their voices even more. And we need to raise LGBTQ voices more. We need to raise the voices of disabled authors. We need to raise their voices more than books just about those people. We need to raise those authors that share those identities. I think it's more important that if we want more diverse books, we need more diverse authors.
You're not only doing that, but you're also raising a spotlight and showing the younger generation, hey, that can be my story, and it doesn't have to be my story that's taken by somebody else. I can own my own voice and have it appreciated and honored.
Right.
So I was also in a tricky situation too, because I come from more of an acting background. It was very few and far between when I first started with Asian-specific roles. Mm-hmm. Many of us were just so grateful to even have an opportunity to audition for a role written for an Asian person, even knowing it's not an Asian person writing that Asian character at all. But it's a catch-22 because once you work your way up, then you want to create a larger platform. Once you kind of build up a reputation and say, now that people see me and can acknowledge my work, I have a larger platform with a voice to say, hey, we need now also more Asian Americans to write these Asian American stories. It's really important right now. I feel like especially younger generation that they're so easily molded. I really want them to understand where we're coming from.
Yeah. And I think that we also have an issue with people looking at diversity as a trend. It's not a trend because when you see something as a trend, you're taking away the humanity from it. Any author who approaches this and looks at diversity and they're like, okay, that's how I can get published. You're first of all, you're doing it wrong.
Yes.
If the only reason you're going to make this character Black or this character Asian or this character LGBT is because you think it will get you in the door now because diversity seems to be the thing, I already know you're going to do it wrong. If you're going to write diverse characters, don't look at it as a way in or as a meal ticket. Yes. Really, really look at these characters as human beings because you're going to affect a human being if you get this wrong.
I agree. Absolutely. And you know what? This may not fully relate, but in my mind, because my girlfriend is about to open up a restaurant, for me, going around and doing more research, I almost see something that correlates with writers and the publishing world and even the restaurant world. I'm starting to notice that people, especially Asian cuisine, there's people who are not Asian who obviously see it as a trend, whether it's Southeast Asian or something, they try and make money off of it. I try the food. I'm like, was there any research done? Have you ever traveled to this country? What the fuck are you doing? Just throwing shit around? What is this? Some go to the extent of wearing something that looks like a kimono and misspelling the actual words of the actual traditional dishes that they're claiming to make. Clearly, you're just trying to make money off of a trend. Don't do that. Even with Buddhism. I grew up Buddhist. Don't make Buddhism a trend. We are not a style. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a recurring theme throughout of overall minorities in general. I'd love to throw a listener question at you. One of our listeners, Kat Cho, she's awesome and she's been with us for a long time.
I know her. I know her from Twitter.
You're so awesome. You remember your Twitter followers?
I do. The ones that interact with me the whole lot. I remember name pretty well. So Kat Cho, I've seen that name. Yes. Okay.
You are so freaking awesome. Kat would love to hear your experience as a debut author. I know in the beginning I was asking you how you were feeling, but I think from her end, I'm assuming more so the writing process side.
That has been a roller coaster already. I have learned how to say no, and it's become my new favorite word. Like, I'm a 2-year-old. It's amazing in the sense that now that people have read the book or they've read excerpts from the book, hearing how much they love it, because before that, writing is very isolated at times. And before you get an agent, it's just you. But then once you get an agent, it's you and your agent. Then once you get an editor, it's you and your editor. And you will think, okay, they're supposed to like it. When other people like it, it's amazing. I'm learning that I have to be careful with how much I do. My time is valuable now. I have to look at it as that because I have a second book to write. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle every day because there's this thing called book two hell. It's a real thing. It's the pressure that you get when you see people loving your first book so much. All of the negative voices get into your head as you're writing your second book because you compare it to the first one. I'm currently dealing with that in a way, but it's going much better. The debut author experience, what I love so far is the sense of community. I'm never alone in this. As long as you surround yourself and connect with people and reach out to people, you won't be alone. I have so many author friends now that I can just text out of nowhere. For instance, the other week I was going through a mini crisis that debut authors will go through, and I simply texted Nikki Yoon, the author of Everything Everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm freaking out, blah, blah, blah. And immediately she called me and she gave me so much wisdom in just a few minutes that I'm forever grateful for her for that. I think she was getting ready to go this question and answer session with Nick Robinson and Amanda Stenberg, but she had time to call me.
What?
Biggest advantage is having that sense of community and reaching out to other authors, especially authors who maybe have published before you. And debut authors, a lot of misinformation can go around because everyone's still learning. It's kind of like if you're in a class full of new kids and everybody thinks they know what's going to happen, but nobody really knows. And misinformation can get spread. It's always good to talk to veterans in a way and get their advice and get them to help you even clear your head sometimes. But the sense of community, not just with other authors, but the sense of community with the readers has been amazing, because I've had so many teenagers and even so many aspiring authors who've reached out to me and they've said that I've inspired them, and they don't know that by telling me that they're inspiring me.
So you said you can reach out in this community. Is this something that is within your world of your literary agent introduces you to each other, or your publishers introduce you to each other and like, hey, you guys should chat? Or you actually reach out to them and say, hey, I have a book coming out. It's publishing on a certain date and I'm feeling nervous.
A couple of things. One is Twitter. Twitter is perfect for that. That's how Nikki and I connected.
Wow, really? Through Twitter?
Yeah.
Wow. This is crazy.
Yeah. After my book deal and my movie deal were both announced, I got a lot of new authors who followed me. I got a lot of people who reached out. If you haven't had people reach out, or even if you don't know how to maybe reach out to people and ask for advice, I would suggest even going to author events or book festivals, even if you aren't doing a panel. Or so many of these festivals have little mingle sessions with authors. A lot of us are very nice. A lot of authors who are willing to help each other out. You just have to sometimes step out of your comfort zone, and it's scary as hell, but sometimes it's just contacting someone and saying, hey, I could use some advice. I'm an author. And a lot of times, a lot of us will respond. But Twitter is definitely a big one, because it's funny how a small little conversation about, for instance, how there are too many Wolverine movies can lead to you connecting with another author.
I would be jumping in on that conversation. I love me some Wolverine. I'm not going to lie right now.
If you have an agent, reaching out to your agent siblings is a great way. I have the same agent as Adam Silvera and Becky Albertalli. I connected with them first through him when I was considering signing with him. He gave them my phone number to convince me to sign with him.
That's genius.
Yeah.
That was a genius move.
Becky is now my soulmate and Adam is my twin. I would definitely recommend reaching out to your agent siblings and even people who are in your agency, other authors. Sometimes all it takes is saying, hey, I'm signed to the same agent and I was wondering if you could give me some advice on this, this, and this. People will respond. It takes some doing on our part as authors, and it's scary because a lot of us are so introverted and the idea of reaching out is scary, but I promise it is so worth it, because it does help create that sense of community and it helps you feel like you're not alone in this. Okay. Trust me, it's going to get overwhelming, but knowing that there are people who've been through it and who survived it helps a whole lot.
I'm so happy to hear what an amazing, accepting, and warm and welcoming community you're in. That's really, really cool. I think a lot of the listeners will really take away from that. You know, when you mentioned just now that you were working on the second book, where it's, oh gosh, now it's like all these expectations. That's perfect, because it leads into another question that Kat had, was that she knows that you wrote in middle grade and you queried it. So that's the same one you're talking about?
This one is more of a spinoff from The Hate U Give, because it's set in the same neighborhood. The main character makes a very, very, very minor appearance in The Hate U Give towards the end. It's set in the same neighborhood, and I can't say a whole lot about it, but I will say that it is putting my rapper past to use.
Yes, that's so awesome. That other one that Kat was mentioning, is that going to be something they're going to work on, or is that going to be the back burner?
It's on the back burner, but since she mentioned it, I'm going to have my agent listen to this podcast. Hi, Brooks. I hope you know that someone wants me to write that middle grade.
Hint, hint.
I've actually had quite a few people reach out and ask me about that, because the query for it was on the Query Shark blog. The first time I sent it in, she was like, this is fantastic, which is rare. I may have to look at that one again.
You have so much going on, so I'm sure that's something that you can just pick up and work on again as well.
My middle grade was a bit different because I was writing about superheroes. I still feel like it's important. As a kid, when I was in the middle grade age range, I loved superheroes. I still do. Seeing especially Black superheroes was incredible to me, because it showed me Black people doing some kick-ass awesome things. Then we see Black characters put in antagonistic roles, unfortunately, in media. And so seeing superheroes was amazing to me. So I would love to get back to it one day. And I hope my agent really is listening.
We do need that story out there with The Hate U Give and the second one that you're working on. That is more in the YA world. For this one, it's more middle grade. I feel younger readers are very impressionable, and that is the time where they need more stories like yours. So yes, if your agent is listening, yes, please, we need that book out here ASAP. I'm sorry, Angie, but you're not going to have a life for a while. You're going to be writing 24/7. Last question. She'd love to know, how did you build your online presence connecting with readers?
Twitter is a big part of my life. I think I'm addicted to it. I've had my Twitter account since before I was even signed to a literary agent. That's actually how I connected with my agent, through Twitter.
Oh.
Building a platform even back then was a big help because I was able to connect with people who were also in the query trenches, as we call them. And I was able to connect with authors who were published. I think starting as soon as you can, even if you just signed with the agent, or even if you don't have an agent, I think starting an online presence now helps with the future because people will know you. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of people who, when my deal was announced, they were excited because they knew what I'd gone through before all of that. They were in the trenches with me and they saw me in my ups and downs and the querying and wanting to give up and all of this. I think starting as soon as you can and starting relationships and genuine relationships, first of all, because do not go on Twitter or any sort of social media just to build yourself up. Don't go on there just to benefit yourself. Understand that you need to be there for other people as well and promote other authors, because once you become published, that's a big thing. You don't want to be that person on Twitter who only gets on Twitter to promote their own book. You won't have friends then.
I agree. I almost feel like with everything in the creative world too, acting as well, you can't just get on and just be talking about yourself all the time. You got to also talk about your friends. It's nice to talk about connecting with your fans too, just to see what you can give back. Building a genuine community where everybody really is looking out for each other is a much better way to go. And I think at the end of the day too, no matter where you end up, you can walk away knowing that you did your best in helping other people too.
Right.
Okay, we need to go into your rapper background. I need to hear more about this, Miss Street Cred.
Rapping in a way connected with books for me. I became a rapper because I was a book nerd and I wanted people to see me as being cool. I will probably get in trouble for saying this. When I was in the young adult age range, there weren't as many books that I could see myself in. And I drifted away from books for a little while there because of that. But hip hop, I saw myself in it. Hip hop is, according to Chuck D, it's Urban America CNN. And it showed me, and it gave me the stories I could see myself in a lot of times. I could listen to Tupac or I could listen to Nas and I could hear their stories. And they were telling the stories that I saw every single day that I didn't always see in young adult books. I think we don't give hip hop enough props for the storytelling element and the representation that it gives so many kids, because that's why so many of them flock to it, because they hear themselves and they see themselves in those stories. And then the way these rappers even carry themselves, they see themselves in that. For me personally, with Tupac, I've always loved his music. And what I love, though, the most about Tupac is that he was more than just a musician. He was more than just a rapper. He was a poet. He was an activist in his own right. I love that I can listen to a Tupac album and in one song he'll have me thinking, another song he'll have me crying, and another song he'll have me laughing. That's something I want to do as a writer. The title, The Hate U Give, did come from his Thug Life tattoo. There are so many elements of the book that he inspired even beyond that. I'm going to give a little tidbit here that I don't think I've told anywhere else. Even Star's name was influenced by Tupac, because he once wrote a poem called Starry Night in reference to the Van Gogh painting, but he also wanted to name his daughter Star.
Oh, wow. Really?
And he never had a daughter. And his middle name was Amaru. And I gave her the middle name Amara. And
wow.
Yeah. So nobody knows that. I'm just telling this now.
I feel so honored and so special that you shared that the first time ever on the show. Holy moly. Thank you. Do you work in a way as a writer specifically with your process? Do you have certain lyrics that you post up on a wall in your room where you write to remind you to weave that into your story at some point?
I always knew it would be a Tupac-influenced book. I would listen to his songs, and originally every single chapter in the book was named after a Tupac song. I had lyrics at the beginning that reflected what happened in the chapter from those songs. As far as even other songs like Kendrick Lamar or Marvin Gaye, I just made a list of different types of songs that I would listen to get inspiration while I was writing this book, and I would just try to weave it in some way. I have a long Spotify playlist. It's up on my website if anybody wants to listen to it. It is a long playlist, but I do listen to, like, a lot of music. Even now with my second book, I'm calling it more so my Biggie book because he's influencing that. Right now, I've been listening to some of his songs and listening to his album. He only did two albums, Biggie. Well, technically three, but we'll say two while he was alive. I've been listening to it, and I've been trying to pick up on themes that he uses in his music, just like I did with Tupac, listening to the themes in the music and then finding out, okay, what songs may have influenced him when he was doing this. I know with Tupac particularly, when I was doing a lot of listening to him, I knew that he was influenced by Marvin Gaye and he was influenced by Sam Cooke. So I would go listen to Marvin Gaye and Sam Cooke. And then I found out Kendrick Lamar is deeply influenced by Tupac. So I would listen to Kendrick Lamar. For me, sticking with one artist helps a lot because from that one artist, they'll lead to other artists. I'm seeing that a lot now with this Biggie book that I'm working on, listening to him and then listening to people who either influenced him or he influenced is helping me put together a theme for the whole book that it may not be too apparent to everybody else, but it's apparent to me. It worked the first time around. Hopefully it'll work this time around.
You have nothing to worry about. Let's wrap it up with the last three rapid fire questions on writing tips because you've been so phenomenal on the show. First one, tips on query letters.
Find the Query Shark blog and read the entire thing. That was the best thing I've ever done for myself. Query Shark, for those who don't know, is literary agent Janet Reed, who is a boss badass. Her blog, The Query Shark, has query letters dating back years where authors will send the letters in and she will tell them what's wrong with it and they will send them back and she'll tell them what's still wrong with it. Definitely read the blog. One of my queries is on there too. I won't say any more than that. Get critique partners for your letter, particularly people who have not read your book, because people who have not read it can tell you if it makes sense or not.
Second one. Money. Tips on earning income while you're trying to survive as an artist or a writer.
I have a day job. When I was writing The Hate U Give, I was a secretary to a bishop at a local mega church. Wow. Surprise, considering how many curse words I wrote in it. And I will confess, I was sitting at work working on this book. Wait a minute, I have a habit here. I did that in school too. I was sitting at work. I was supposed to be answering calls, and I would answer calls. And while I'm answering calls, I would work on my book. Definitely have a day job. And I hope my former boss does not listen to this.
Are you currently writing full time?
Yes, I am right now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I would definitely say have a day job. Most authors do, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that it doesn't take away from your art. It adds to your pocket so you can focus on your art. Because if you're worried about bills and everything, you will not be able to write as well. So definitely have a day job. So nobody really wants to be a starving artist.
Yeah.
Nobody does, really, I don't think. Definitely have a day job. And if you want things as far as writing go, first of all, freelance is a great way if you want to make writing money. Freelance, and you just have to accept that sometimes you're going to have to do things you may not want to do to make income. It's tough out there. I sympathize a whole lot, but definitely try freelance and definitely try a day job. And even once you get a publishing contract, make yourself available for opportunities, but also don't give more than you accept. And what I mean by that is you will have a lot of people who will say, well, I want you to do this event and I need you to do it for free. Remember that your time is your money. The time you would take to do that free event, you could be writing a book that could get you another contract. Even once you get that publishing deal, remember that time is money and don't sell yourself short.
That was really, really heartfelt. So the third one, what are small manageable steps you would advise writers to take every week towards accomplishing their writing goals?
Write. you have to be disciplined. I was recently thinking about this. Well, I used to want to be a WNBA player when I was younger. I stopped growing at 5'1", so that's impossible. I remember how every day I would try to go outside and make 100 jump shots. And I knew when I started working on this book, because I had a job that was basically 40 plus hours. So I had to fight for that time to write. So being disciplined and fighting for that writing time is definitely key. But also, don't beat yourself up if you don't reach a certain goal a certain day. For instance, if you don't write 1,000 words that day and you only write 200, that's fine. You wrote something. That's better than nothing. I think being disciplined, but also not being hard on yourself and finding the balance of the two is key to hitting your writing goals. Definitely.
Have you ever gone to conferences or workshops that really helped you throughout your book for The Hate U Give?
I didn't go to a lot of writing conferences. Here's the thing, though. I studied creative writing in college. That's what my degree was. So I had no choice. For 4 years, it was basic workshops. After a while, I got tired of workshops.
You're like, I am so over
this. By the time I was writing book, I didn't want to go to any more workshops. I would study stuff online, but by then, yeah, I was just sick of workshops and being taught how to write. I could be spending this time actually writing. You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But workshops are great. Let me not downplay workshops. Nobody has to have a writing degree to be a writer. Workshops are wonderful. There are so many kinds now. You can even do them online. I would definitely look into that. When you look at a workshop, do research on it, because anybody can say that they have a workshop. And nowadays, we even see so many people coming up with scams of, hey, I can help you get published in 3 easy steps. Just call this number. Don't fall for that. Some of it is, you just have to do the research and take the time.
Amazing. You're so awesome. Okay, last and final question. What is one or a few books that you recommend for our listeners?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because I seriously do not remember a lot of those books. The biggest thing that helps me with writing books is reading other books. If you're writing young adult books, read young adult books. That is the biggest thing you can do for yourself, because it's easy to say, I'm going to sit down and write this young adult book, and you're basing it on the young adult books you read when you were a teenager. If that was 10 years ago, young adult books have changed so much in that short amount of time. Definitely the best thing you can do for even figuring out your craft and figuring out voice and everything is reading young adult books and staying up to date with young adult books. Same with middle grade. Same with all kids' books. Read in your genre. Read in your category. Honestly, sometimes you can learn even more from just doing that and picking up on patterns in reading those books than you would in, say, reading a craft book. I learned a lot about voice by reading other young adult books.
Do you remember if there's one or two books from young adult genre where the voice really stood out to you?
Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda by Becky Abertal. I would have said that before she was my soulmate, but... It's funny because my agent knew how much I loved that book. The voice in that book is incredible. Simon is so alive in that book. I feel like I could text him one day and he would respond. You can actually email Simon for real, though.
What?
And you will get a response, because Becky is that awesome. Yes.
Oh my God, this is so cool.
Simon has an email address in the book, and if you email it for real, you will get a response. It's amazing.
Get out of here. That is genius. Okay, so that's a voice that you're in love with. It's incredible.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I was thinking of a book that hasn't even come out yet. There's one that's called Dear Martin by Nick Stone. I had a chance to read it. The voice is incredible, and the way she does format in that book is incredible. She plays around with different formats. And this is something I'm starting to see now in young adult books. Like I said, I would definitely recommend reading books in your genre, because you even get to find out about trends and new techniques that are taking place because you see it in books that are being published. Read, 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 read.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. This was such an awesome episode. Thank you so much, Angie, for being here with us. I'd love for you to tell listeners where they can find you.
I have a website, angiethomas.com.
Nice.
And I have my Twitter account at AC Thomas Books. I should do Instagram more. It's AC Writes. You can find me usually at those three.
And that wraps up our episode with the awesome Angie Thomas. Angie, it was so much fun having you on the show. Thank you so much for being so transparent throughout our conversation. I seriously had the best time with you. Storytellers, thank you, as always, for listening in and joining us. Please say hi to Angie on Twitter at AC Thomas Books.
Angie recommended really amazing resources for you to check out, especially if you're working on querying an agent right now. You'll want to head over to our show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Angie Thomas. If you'd love to support our show by rocking your 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug signed by yours truly. And thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other writers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we also post sneak peeks of future episodes. Join me over in our new Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye!